Hey everybody, and welcome to Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Mooney, and I'm here with...
Paulie Presenza, known as the Moo Cow Moo. Moo, Moo, Moo.
And we're also with...
Just Jen.
And right before we get into this movie, Night of the Ghouls.
Woohoo.
Sounds scarier than it actually is. Here's some mood music.
Mongo.
And we're back.
Technically.
Sort of.
Kind of.
Yeah.
We're back from beyond.
From beyond the grave.
Thanks to Dr. Acula.
Yes. So I guess we'll get right into it then, considering you are pretty much. Night of the Ghouls is a Edward D. Wood Jr.
Yay.
I'm sorry, you gotta say his whole full name, you know, when you do it. Give him some respect.
Respect, baby.
I know. He's one of like the premier bad directors. He's
right.
The one that people like, they gave him a golden turkey for Plan 9, which honestly deserves it the most. Out of all the
it's the most
different stuff.
Fun, but you know, he could have had other turkeys for other movies. But it's, you're right, he's the guy that most people who are not familiar with our genre of film, they will recognize the name. And of course, because they had the great movie with Johnny Depp in it, people actually now know who he is. He's gone mainstream.
I didn't ask this before, but you have seen Ed Wood, right?
No.
Oh, she's never even seen Ed Wood.
You need to see that. That's a great movie.
That's a great movie. That's not like this or anything, obviously.
That's an actual movie. A wonderful movie.
That's an actual movie. as compared to these are just really low budget fun, you know? They're not meant to be like a serious movie.
Right. It's a love note to movies of this type.
Mm-hmm. And so, to begin with, basically Ed Wood had made Plan 9 from Outer Space, and after that, he wanted to make another movie. So he got some money together, and he was able to, I guess, rent out a studio, which we pretty much see, because the house that it's supposed to take place in looks like a fucking studio.
Oh, yeah, with drapes.
Yeah, but...
Not even ironed drapes.
Nope.
Oh,
it was
appalling.
Ironing costs money.
I know. They weren't even able to hire someone to iron the drapes. Here's an interesting note, is what I found out, is that Ed Wood, you know, had got this for really cheap. It was like one of the cheapest places that he could do. And basically what he did was they would all hang out at the bar and wait for the studio to close so that they could have it. And he would just start buying people alcohol, you
mm-hmm.
know, beforehand, right? Before they shoot. And then he had no money left over to pay the cast.
Right.
So there was one day that a second assistant director had, or no, an assistant director had to go in and tell Tor Johnson that he was not going to get paid for his shoot
right.
because they didn't have enough money. So Tor was like, I'm going home. Bye-bye. And then the same day, that same assistant director who was just hired after one of them quit on him, said he had to go and talk to Kenny Duncan, who we'll get into these actors in a little bit. He went and he had to go up to Kenny Duncan and he had to go up to Velda Hansen and tell them to get ready for their scenes. Velda wouldn't go because she would do the scenes on there, but she would not rehearse because she didn't want to spend any more time with Kenny because Kenny Duncan was being very obnoxious. So when the first assistant director said, you know, something about like, why won't she be like this? He said, well, damn, all I told her was, I'd really like to chew on your tits.
Jeez.
You know, that might do it for some people, you know? And so... it was really funny how this movie is not at all raunchy or it doesn't have any curse words. I mean, they say God darn it.
Right.
And then
God darn it.
The people behind it are very crude and obnoxious and scary.
But they kept that to themselves.
And they kept that to themselves. They did not bring that to the movie. So that's a good bit.
It's funny because I there was another stinker that I remember watching Kenny Duncan's in there. Excuse me, I did some research, and he actually used to do short films for Remington and for different cigarette companies back in the day, and he had one called Trick Shooting with Kenny Duncan,
mm-hmm.
and I believe if you go to one of those things online that has all the free stuff from the 50s, all the old commercials and all the little public information movies that they make, you can still see that there. So
Did you know Ed Wood directed a couple of them?
Yeah, yeah, no? I did.
So yeah, that's probably how he got Kinney for this movie, as he was working with him on that. But so there's a little background. There's basically this is a sequel to Bride of the Monster, which was Ed Wood's epic monster movie with Bela Lugosi. May he rest in peace. I guess everybody has to rest in peace because I don't think anybody from this movie is still alive.
No.
And if they are, I'm sorry. Not really,
even Paul Marco, I don't think.
No, Paul Marco passed away a while ago.
It's a shame.
So yeah, but you know, we'll get into actors in a little bit, and we'll talk more about the stuff that's coming up. But let's go into the story, I guess.
Yep.
I guess it's funny.
I don't know. Compared to some of these other movies, this one had a story.
Right.
Yes, it's just not very well told.
Yeah. Well, come on, that director tells you everything that's happening. Come on,
everything.
It's
got one of those overarching narrators who grabs you by the nose and leads you through every single scene throughout the whole thing. So you don't miss any juicy bits at all.
The man was walking into the cemetery.
Yeah.
He stopped. He turned around. He was looking at the woman's eyes. She winked at him.
Yeah.
Like, we can see that. Like, this is a very, you know, visual
well, we can see
medium.
Something anyway.
I know. Well, when it's pitch black.
Right. This is another one of those movies that's all day for night kind of stuff, and I can't see a thing, and we can all see everything.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty funny.
Okay, so the story.
Back to the story. So basically, there's a couple. Happened to come across the old Willow's place where that happens to be like refurbished,
right,
apparently, like
right.
remade.
I mean, they literally park right next to it.
Right.
And start playing Kissy Face.
And no, that's another couple. I'm talking about the old couple.
Oh, okay.
The old couple. There's two couples. So, but I'm talking about the old couple. There's an old couple who, the young couple have nothing to do with the old couple. And
true.
It's just another like padding scene, I guess. But the old couple basically see this ghost.
Oh, it was a nightmare of horror!
So they go to the police department and, you know, talk about it or whatever, tell them what's going on. And the police are like, well, let's send one of our best men out there and one of our worst men out there to go and see it. So the best man, was it a Lieutenant Bradford?
Bradford.
Dressed up for the opera, looking quite dapper.
Very nice.
He was supposed to be at the opera, but apparently duty calls, and he's been
duty calls.
Told to go to this thing. So he goes to the house, and he wants to investigate. Doesn't tell the people that he's a police officer, because he doesn't want...
This is the house that in the movie before.
Right.
It supposedly burned down
from the lightning strike, but it was rebuilt, and he did not know that.
I think he did know that.
He didn't know it had been rebuilt.
Right.
Then.
He said he didn't know.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So he comes in there and he walks through and he notices that basically this is a front for basically a scam where they pretend like dead people. They're calling the dead people and basically the...
Well, you know he's a genius because it looks so realistic.
It looked pretty bad.
Yeah.
But... Here's what's confusing a little bit, I guess, about the story. Because, like, you're supposed to see, I guess, the dead husband talking, communicating with his widow.
His widow.
His widow.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, yeah. He's supposed to be communicating with her and her new lover, you know, right? Like, she has this young man who is supposed to, I guess, be the new guy and is supposed to be okay with it or something. And then he's, like, in his coffin communicating with, there's one coffin in the whole, like, set, I guess, or
right.
whatever. But he's, like, trying to tell her, it's okay, you can do whatever, you know, and then it turns out that, that's supposed to be all fake or something. Like, they're supposed to say actors, which made absolutely no sense, because where are they communicating? I don't know.
So, clearly, she doesn't recognize that this is somebody else other than her husband.
Well, she did. She showed no emotion whatsoever. That woman was cold.
She was grabby with the young stud, I tell you that. She was got her hands all over him.
That was true.
Mm-hmm.
She was getting some young chicken there.
Yep.
But then... So the, who was it? What's his name? knows that it's a con. And
oh, Bradford.
Yeah. Bradford.
Yeah.
So he's veteran of spook details. He knows a real one from a fake one.
And yeah, and he's supposed to be like the supernatural investigator, basically, which makes absolutely no sense.
Yes, he's the early Mulder.
Yeah, like he's a supernatural investigator going in and doing this. This is why he was told he had to do it, because nobody else can figure out if these are ghosts or not, you know, or whatever.
Well, and of course, meantime, they've sent Kelton along with him, and Kelton is supposed to shadow him and be there with him, and Kelton is afraid of everything, and, you know, he can't even get out of the car, because as soon as he does, he hears screams, he hears dogs howling, and he sees shadows, and he's just terrified of everything. He shoots every bullet he's got into what he thinks is a ghost, and then he hides in the car and won't come out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the coward and the funny man of the whole movie.
Calls for backup.
He calls for backup. Times. Yeah, and they won't send anybody out because Inspector Robbins, who's in charge of everything, has gone home.
Right.
I guess for the night, and then he comes back or something. I don't know. It was a little confusing.
Yeah, I guess he's supposed to go home, but I guess they keep bugging him, so he comes back in and drinks more coffee next to his little pen set with the two weird dogs.
Yep.
Probably schnauzers.
Schnauzers.
Probably schnauzers, I would guess. Or Rob. Or like a... So anyway.
Yeah.
Let's move on. So anyway, then Lobo. Let's talk about Lobo for a second, because... And he comes out at one point to try to, I guess, to apprehend.
So you miss part. When he goes into the house, he discovers that it's this con. And then he wanders off.
That's true.
When the doctor leaves to do whatever, he decides to wander off. And then that's when they send Lobo out to capture him.
Mm.
Right. He's like shocked by the cold, hard steel staircase rail. It's like a big deal to him.
With lots of narration.
Lots.
And lots of his thoughts.
Internal thoughts being thrown out there by the narrator so that you don't miss one juicy drop.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of weird about that. Like, yeah, that was, like, hearing his thoughts was just like, okay.
They weren't even that important thoughts.
No, nope, nope, nope.
Oh. They're like, maybe I should have eaten chicken today.
Well, it's like, you know, Ed Wood is almost afraid to have any scenes where there's very little dialogue. It's like he feels he has to fill it up with somebody saying something, or somebody's going to go to sleep, or somebody's going to get bored, or something, so... He puts in all this extra unnecessary narration, and I don't think he quite grasps the fact that it's quite annoying.
Yeah.
And this is why people generally don't do that.
Yeah, actually, they teach you in any like writing class these days that for film writing classes, like narration, stay away from it. Nobody wants to hear this.
No.
And
show, don't tell.
Right. And there's a lot of telling. I mean, it feels like Ed Wood wanted to make a novel and instead made a film.
I mean, if you were visually impaired, you could probably sit here and see the, you know, enjoy the whole movie because Ed mm-hmm. Wood's going to tell you the entire thing, pretty much.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, so back to it. So they kidnap Bradford, basically, but not very well. You know? Like, none of these guys ever get kidnapped
Nothing gets done well.
They put him in a room and close the door.
Right.
That's it.
And don't even lock it. No. They just close the door. Like, so...
They didn't expect him to be so clever that he could figure out how to open a door by himself.
Meanwhile, Kelton's outside, and Kelton is seeing a ghost, right, basically, and is terrified. So when he calls up the people, whatever, all this stuff happens.
Well, and there's two ghosts.
And they're really not ghosts. They're just women, and one's in white lace, and the other's in black lace.
Yeah.
Just women in lace dresses. That's it.
Yeah, but apparently the one in white is part of the con, and the one in black is supposed to be a real ghost.
Right.
He sees both.
He sees both, and he doesn't shoot the white ghost.
Thankfully.
At all. Thankfully, because she's actually the human, you know. Right. And then the black ghost, he shoots at like 3 or 4 times, I'm going to say, and misses each time, I guess, or whatever.
Well, that tiara was a bit much.
You should have shot it off her head.
That would have been funny.
Technically, I don't think that was a tiara. That was in the crown territory.
Yeah. So anyway, he decides he's going to go inside the house, you know, That's better than being stuck in his car. And he goes to investigate the house. And also, I think he comes across Lobo as well, you know, when he comes to the house, if I'm correct.
Well, the doctor and then the lady in white have gone off and they think they're being so clever, they're going to get this money. And I think she tells him that the police are there and they send Lobo out to get him.
Because one of the rubes gives them a check for $10,000. I can't imagine why, but...
Well, there's also, they also say that she also tries to point out the fact that there's another ghost out there, but she, like, it takes her, like a million minutes to freaking...
And it's not her fault, it's just Ed Wood's script.
No, I love it. It's something. Well, it's a lady in black lace.
Right.
Yeah, it's not something, it's a person.
It's not and
a
really huge that difficult tiara. To describe.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe they were thinking it was going to be, like, maybe when they originally wrote it, and then they're like, they don't have enough money to make it, you know.
Well, I mean, he has a problem expressing the fact that some of these characters are supposed to be experiencing, you know, intense fear, but rather than allowing the actors to show it, he's speaking it or making them say it, and you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work.
So, basically... You know, I'm going to wrap this up a little bit because this story goes on. I mean, we're going to tell the whole story, I guess. You know, let's basically what happens is Kelton and them come in. The other team of cops come to help them out of nowhere.
Deus Ex Machina.
You know, right. Help them out. They end up finding out that there are actual ghosts in the house.
No, they don't. The doctor does.
He's like, so all of a sudden they show up with Criswell in the lead. He's like, your powers of being a medium are stronger than you think. But he was a fake the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. No sense whatsoever.
They took him to the grave
with them.
In the same coffin.
Yeah, they just stuck him in the coffin and they're closing it up. He's like, oh!
And then the white ghost runs out and ends up being mesmerized by the black ghost, and who knows what happens with her.
Yeah, they don't really wrap her up. They just, you know, they say that Kelton's explanation might be the best one, where he says she might have gone back to the grave. But otherwise, the last shot you see of her is kind of wandering through the woods, but she's wandering through the woods most of the whole picture, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
She could come back for the sequel.
And Lobo... On top of that, has been shot like 10 times.
Yeah.
And I think we're pretty sure he might be dead.
Lobo, you know? Get lead poisoning.
But he might also not be dead. So Lobo could still be out there.
Well, unfortunately, the original Lobo is, but you never know.
Tor Johnson.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Tor.
Rest in peace, Tor. He was awesome.
But yeah, so they kind of wrap it all up and it's done. You know, it's over. They've closed the case, on whether or not it was ghosts or real, you know, or whatever it was.
I mean,
I don't know.
Okay, so looking at this from a writer's perspective, there are not very well written parts of it. However, I do kind of give Ed Wood a little bit of props in that instead of going for an actual ghost movie, he decided to go another direction and say, okay, we're going to set up a phony ghost, a phony guy. Somebody's trying to run a racket on people and pretend that there's ghosts. And then, of course, the ultimate surprise is that he actually does have powers and brings back ghosts, and then they take their revenge on him. So that is kind of actually sort of an advanced set of thinking that was pretty cool. But, you know, it's just, unfortunately, Ed Wood doesn't have the writing chops to really pull that off. So, you know, maybe if somebody else had tried it, maybe if he'd written it for somebody else to direct, who knows?
Well, there was a 1959 movie that started a little actor known Vincent Price called House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
This
true.
Was very much like
House
on Hill.
But I thought this was before that, wasn't it?
No, same.
Same year?
Same year.
Oh, I thought this was before that.
I think that's funny that they kind of made a similar movie. And instead of Kenny Duncan looked very much like Vincent Price.
I
mean, He was like their knockoff of Vincent Price.
I tell you what, the house on Haunted Hill had just as many fake skeletons as the Ed Wood one does.
Exactly.
It's not like that is a great film either. That's kind of a crappy sticker as well.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit. Yeah. Yay. It's a little bit more fun and probably better written.
Oh my goodness! Just getting a little wild over here.
Make fun of me. Continue.
Well, I wasn't making fun of you, but all right. What? All right. Anyway, moving on. So, that basically in the whole thing, it was basically a house on Haunted Hill, but with Ed Wood doing it instead of William Castle. Both directors not very known for their schlock, you know, whatever. Right. But it's a fun movie. Like, both are fun.
Right. Well, I mean, I personally prefer the Ed Wood one over House on Haunted Hill. But, yeah, I can definitely see the parallels. I honestly thought this movie came out first.
I think they're about the same. But anyway. So, let's talk about the characters. There's, I guess the first one we talked about is Lieutenant Bradford.
Okay.
And who played him? Duke Moore, I guess?
I think so.
Yeah. So, Duke Moore played Lieutenant Bradford. I liked him. Like, I think he was kind of...
Oh, yeah.
He was very professional.
Yeah, like, he was not a bad actor.
Yeah.
The one part where he sees what he thinks is a mannequin, that was a little bad.
Done. That was horrible.
That was awful. That reaction was just not very realistic. And, that should have had several new takes. But that aside, he was pretty good with, like, his dialogue. And, you know, he definitely stood in all the places he was supposed to stand. I bought him as a lieutenant, a police lieutenant. But, for an Ed Wood movie, he did pretty well, I thought.
I was about to say, out of all the characters, he was one of the best actors.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the best actors. I also like Kenny Duncan in it. Like, I like...
Oh, yeah.
Who played Dr. Acula. Which obviously is a reference to Dracula.
Dracula.
I can't even say it. It's the doctor.
Dr. Acula.
I know.
And he was wonderful.
He's been in a whole bunch of stinkers. He's one of those great, great, you know, Z movie actors from the 50s and early 60s. And what's the one? The she creature. The blurry chick from outer space who comes out. She's in that one. He's in a bunch of movies from back then. I can never remember these names of movies anymore.
Okay. Blurry chick from outer space. Yeah. There you go, guys.
It's the one where her touch poisons everyone and they drop dead. I forget the name of it. But he's in that one, too.
Blurry chick from outer space.
She's just blurry.
That's
they
a
shoot
great
her
title.
Blurry.
There you go.
I love it. I know. Blurry chick from outer space.
Believe me, I would love to reshoot that film. I would love to. It's got this guy in there who's so lonely. He talks to his dog all the time. It's hysterical.
You've got to remake it, but with that title.
I know, Blurry Chick from Outer Space.
Okay. Right.
But anyway, he's a B movie veteran, who does his thing. So he's good in there, and of course there's Kelton, one of the great Ed Wood universe characters, who it's Paul Marco. Paul Marco kind of owns that role. At least back then he did, and who shows up in a number of different Ed Wood films.
He showed up in a bunch of them, but like he's played Kelton three times, I believe. There's like it's like the Kelton trilogy.
Right.
First was Bride of the Monster, then Plan 9 from Outer Space, then Night of the Ghouls. It's just kind of a goofy thing that. All of them have, you know.
It should really be released on Criterion as the Kelton Paul Marcos trilogy. That would be awesome.
Yeah, Criterion, don't listen to them. Please don't. I love his portrayal because he's such a scaredy cat.
I know.
But he has so much fun.
Right.
You know, he has great lines. He has great facial expressions.
Yeah, we always get these spook details.
Yeah, oh, man.
Such a whiner.
Yeah, but he was great in Bride of the Monster, and he had a smaller role in Plan 9, not as big. Mm-hmm. And You know, he only had like a few scenes in that, but so yeah, this was kind of more of his movie.
Right, you know? Right. And as you know, his role is to be the comic foil, and he does a good job of it. I mean, it's a small role, but it's essential, and I think he does a pretty good job of it. And he's kind of a small guy, so he pulls off looking terrified of everything pretty well, I think.
They're constantly commenting, how did he get through
I know.
The police academy?
How did this little twerp get through?
Yep.
Well, you know what? Somebody has to, right?
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Has to be Kilton. How he passed the examination, we'll never know.
No.
Which is just writing for, you know, Ed Wood. Look.
Kelton's Police Academy. We need to shoot that film.
Oh, dear.
All right. So, and then let's see. There was her name Sheila? Is that her name?
Yeah, that's Valda Hansen's character.
Yeah, Valda Hansen, who I believe was very young. She might have been 16 at the time. I know that was when she was 16 when he discovered, when Ed Wood discovered her. But I don't know if she was 16 when this film was.
She does not do a bad job either. I think the most issue I have with her is just trying to chew up and spit out Ed Wood's dialogue. And then just, you know, okay, the way he shoots her and anybody else just kind of sort of sleepwalking through the woods in a poofy dress. You know, that's there's not much you can do with that. You're going to look ridiculous no matter what.
Right.
Yeah.
But she doesn't do a bad job when she actually gets. Yeah, and when she gets lines, she does a pretty good job with it.
Yeah, like I mean, it's tough to say these lines. You right. know that he wrote. I mean, I'm surprised she didn't just say, "Can I just say this like a little bit differently?" But maybe she tried. Who knows? But she did a wonderful job with what she could.
And she was the youngest one there, so it's possible she could still be around. I don't know. No.
You looked her up?
I did.
Oh.
Oh, that is a shame. That makes me sad.
1993. That was a while ago.
Well, our old buddy Harvey B. Dunn is in there. He plays the very frightened, heavy-set gentleman who comes in with his nagging shrew of a wife. They're the old couple that see the ghosts in the beginning, and the horror, sort of just a complete overreaction. He just they see Valda Hansen standing there in a dress. Mm-hmm. What's so horrible about that?
I guess she's not even like doing anything.
No,
she's just standing there.
She does the weird finger thing, but again, that's not much to be terrified about.
Which apparently was a trick that Ed Wood taught her.
Which I guarantee you came from Bela Lugosi, because Bela Lugosi loved to do things with his hands and fingers.
Yeah, so he probably learned it from him and taught it to Valda, but it's okay.
My favorite thing for him is when they finally stop the car and they actually, you know, the wife sees their first, and she's trying to get his attention to look over there when he finally does. And he just gives the most bizarre facial expression I think I've ever seen.
And she's almost half smiling.
I know.
She's definitely not terrified.
Definitely not. Well, there's nothing to be terrified of, really.
Right.
But his expression at that moment is just priceless. Absolutely priceless.
Interesting thing to go to with Harvey is that Harvey was in Bride of the Monster
yep.
as Captain Robbins. And then there's Inspector Robbins. Now, I'm still not sure if it's supposed to be like Harvey's character, but just a you know different. I don't know something else.
Well,
or
maybe
whatever, or
maybe being used to Ed Wood and not getting paid, he decided, okay, I'll do it, but not for a real role. I'll just for a small role.
Or maybe he just didn't have time.
Or didn't have time.
Didn't have time. There's a million reasons why. Yeah. But my big thing also is it the same character? Is it a brother? Yeah. I mean, who knows?
Who knows? I can tell you that, you know, just like Kenny Duncan, he is also B-movie veteran. He was in movies like Teenagers from Outer Space and a few other ones. So he's definitely another, you know, if you watch enough of these movies, you're going to see him again. And like, oh, there he is, Harvey B. Dunn.
Harvey B. Dunn. yeah, Harvey B. Dunn enough. All right, so we're moving on to... what other characters were there that...
Well,
we talked about Lobo a little
bit.
Yeah,
we talked about Lobo. I do want to shout out to our buddy Clay Stone, which you got to know has got to be one of the fakest names I've ever heard in my life. He plays the young, handsome chicken that the old lady has managed to snag with her arthritic old hands. that she's trying to get permission to marry from her dead husband. I don't know that he's ever been in anything else. I'll have to look it up. But his name, his quote-unquote, I guess, pseudonym was Clay Stone. So
are you sure that was him?
That was him.
Because there's a young man. What about the other couple, the couple people? I was thinking that. I think that was the young man. As there's a young man and a young woman, I think.
Well, remember, they called him a boy.
Okay. I don't know.
The
I see
depth the of the boy
these,
and the girl.
You know, they don't show any of the people's like faces at the end, so you have no idea who is exactly who and
but
whatever.
You notice when the girl in the beginning dies, she's wearing an Angora sweater.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is Ed Wood's famous fetish.
You know what? You might be right about it being the young man, because I'm looking up on IMDb and it says Margaret Mason, who was Tom Mason's wife,
is in
this movie. And she was the old woman. She was Martha, the woman who...
Tom Mason's the chiropractor.
Right? And Tom Mason's the chiropractor right. who actually worked on Ed Wood, not... In Ed Wood, the movie, it was like they said it was the... it was Ed Wood's wife that, or whatever, Kathy,
right.
That was her chiropractor. It actually wasn't. It was actually Ed Wood's chiropractor, right. And he knew him. That whole thing was fake, but it was actually Ed Wood's chiropractor who used him as Bela Lugosi. This time you actually got to see his face.
Right, he was in it. He plays the fake husband that is supposed to be dead for the old lady, giving her absolution to go ahead and marry the young guy and, you know, basically complete the scam.
Yeah, and that guy, Clay Stone, just kind of, maybe that's why they named him that, because or whatever, because he just stood there.
He just stood there. My job is to stand here and look handsome and let the snaggly old arthritic hand of this old lady grab me and paw me.
Yep, pretty much. That was it.
And for whatever reason, while they're sitting around in this weird seance, which we haven't even talked about yet, we'll get to that with special effects, but they're sitting across from three naked skeletons, except they've got hats on for some reason.
Well, one has a wig and one has a mohawk of some sort. I was trying to figure out, well, maybe it was a bird on it, but because...
A dead bird.
A dead bird.
It's supposed to be dark in this room. Oh, dear. I can't tell what it is. Well, one definitely has a wig and one is something else.
But let's talk about Lobo, because Tor Johnson and Lobo. So he was burned in the explosion that happened due to lightning hitting and atomic stuff, whatever. Like the
atomic
lightning,
stuff.
Lightning hit the house that has all these atomic things happening in it.
This is Bride of the Monster.
This is for Bride of the Monster.
So while Bela Lugosi is getting eaten up by the octopus, the lightning comes and hits the lab and blows everybody up. And
it also hits him and it makes him huge, and then somehow or another he died. Whatever. It was a weird freaking movie. Weird ending to the movie, because originally they weren't planning to end it the way they did. They didn't want the explosion.
Right.
But they had to explode the house, and then because that's what the producer wanted.
Right.
And then they ended up rebuilding the house for this movie. And then he probably didn't want to destroy it, because he wanted to do sequels and other
things.
If he wanted to, you know, and he wanted to make Night of the Ghouls, which was originally called Revenge of the Dead.
Aha. Nice. Nice little tidbit there.
But Night of the Ghouls ended up having Tor Johnson come back.
Right.
And Tor Johnson was... I guess half his face was burned
yeah,
off.
He has, yeah, like, he has what looks like to be like a scrambled egg, kind of like smeared onto his face. And he's this wonderful non-speaking role where he just kind of groans a little bit. You know, and that's really about it. And he's kind of the heavy. He picks stuff up and puts them down and just beats people when told. And
puts them in rooms and shuts the door gently behind them.
Yes. Well, he's a gentle giant.
He's a gentle giant.
Sort of.
When
he wants to be.
But anyway, so yeah, so that was
but
interesting.
That whole Angora fetish from the first one is not there, unfortunately.
Well, because he never sees the girl with the Angora sweater.
Right.
If he saw her, maybe he'd go, "Whoa, I'm coming over there," you know.
That's like, funny.
Then Bela Lugosi will have to come back and start smacking him.
Lobo, no!
Down, great. Lobo. Or Kenny could have done that.
Kenny could have done it.
Dr. Acula could have. No, down, Lobo. You know, stop with your Angora fetish.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's the thing about Kenny Duncan is, though, even though he's kind of taken the place of Bela Lugosi, he's not quite as wackadoodle. You know, yeah. Bell is just, you know, kind of goes over the top with his character. And wonderfully, I love it. But Kenny plays it a little bit more like a crook.
Yeah.
Which, well, I think is the way to do it.
Well, I think that's how he was.
Yeah.
You know, because Bela Lugosi was a mad scientist. Kenny Duncan's just, Dr. Acula's just a crook. Just a thief.
It's funny, though, the way they talk about it in the film. They're like, oh, yeah, the mad doctor and the monsters. They just kind of throw that out there like it's common knowledge. Like, monsters? What are you talking about? I mean, it's a generic term, first of all. But, I don't know, could you give us a little background? Maybe not everybody saw the first film.
Oh, I had quite enough narration.
She understood.
Background. I was good.
Yeah, she understood the whole thing.
Yeah.
It didn't cease to, you know, confuse.
Very well. That's good.
Well, I mean, but that's also a problem when it comes to writing, is that you need to kind of let things happen, but then you do have to provide backstory a little bit. And so, you know, it's a little bit of both, I guess. Good and bad.
Well, and that's kind of, I guess, a good thing that he has Lobo, because Lobo is that connection between the two films.
For sure.
It's just that his character is altered.
All right, let's talk about the direction of the movie.
Okay.
You know, so we have Ed...
left.
Was? Oh, yeah. Definitely went left. I was like, wait, what?
I know, I enjoyed the blank stares of both of you. Like, what are you talking about?
Okay. Jen made a joke.
Made a joke.
Made a joke.
I sit back in my little corner.
Can Jen tell funny joke? Ha ha.
I sit in my little corner.
Okay.
My bottle of water.
It's okay. You make funny joke.
Okay.
I just sounded like Tommy Wiseau right there. You make funny joke. You can keep doing it.
Tor laugh at funny. Ha ha.
All right. So direction that went completely left. I agree. Thank you, Jen. It basically was,
bad.
It was horrible.
It was bad. I don't want to say it's horrible. Plan 9 was horrible. This wasn't quite as bad. If you look at his shot selections, they're not so bad. I can't say that they're very good. They're mediocre, which I think for Ed Wood is about as best you're going to get.
Right.
You know, it's just that he's being let down by the fact that, again, day is being substituted for night. You can see the chicken wire in the background of some
continuity.
Of these sets. There are continuity issues, and his own writing is all getting in a way to sort of subvert what story he's trying to tell. Also, the same problem exists in this movie that all of his movies have, and that's editing. There are definitely some editing errors that, you know, happen that really make the viewer kind of confused. Like, what happened? Why did this happen? Why did we see that person for 2 seconds?
Like,
the drunk guy?
Oh my god, that was great. Best scene in the movie.
Wanders in, hiccups, farts, and then leaves.
Wanders into the police station with one wanted poster on the
with the one, Ed Wood.
Of Ed Wood. But what I love is that the cops just kind of look at him, smile a little bit, and then he just wanders off. Okay. Did we expect that guy to show up? Is he a drunk from the bar next door?
Well, like I was telling everybody earlier before this podcast, this actually was shot right next to a bar, right? So they were just, you know, I'm sure that could have been just a random drunk guy that accidentally walked in, realized there's a bunch of cops in here, or people dressed up like cops. Let me turn around and walk away so I don't get in trouble.
Well, right. The actors just go with it. They just look at him like, well, whatever.
And they continue the scene.
Right. Keep rolling. See, my part of me fantasizes that this could have been a moment where Coleman Francis could have wandered in, because Coleman Francis worked with Ed Wood, and he worked with Ray Dennis Stechter and some of these folks, and he was unfortunately a well-known drunk person, and he would have been a perfect person to just wander in, you know, hiccup, fart, and then leave.
I don't know. I wonder if that person was ever credited, because if he's not credited, then that was a random stranger.
I know. It's such a great idea, though, that it's just somebody wandering. Or you could look at it this way and say, well, the cops in this town have a very liberal attitude towards drunks. So you could look at it that way.
Drunk was played by Henry Berdursky, uncredited.
There you go.
Whoa.
I bet he was either a drinking buddy or somebody that Ed Wood owed money to.
Or both. So yeah, the direction was pretty bad. Like, they had a lot of continuity issues and a lot of Really funny, weird scenes. There's, we'll talk, I guess we could talk about that now. The stock footage in the movie, using, was it,
Sinister Urge.
And things like that.
We see like 30 seconds of teenagers being extremely delinquent because they're dancing at the soda shop.
Well, one of them was smoking.
Oh my God.
So.
Oh, that's being delinquent, I guess.
Yep. Yep.
And then they do get into fist fights, little fisticuffs.
Well, there's two little wimpy fist fights, honestly.
Well, one of them is Ed Wood himself, so, yeah.
One of them has a girl in the background. I think she's keeping score.
Yeah. There was one where, like, there's three guys picking on one guy, and there's the woman there, and I guess she's supposed to be his date. She just kind of stands there and looks not particularly interested.
Don't want to mess up your hair.
There was also an interesting thing. I'm trying to find exactly. There was a one of the scenes was okay. Most of Lieutenant Bradford's exploration of Dr. Akla's house when he's walking around like exploring was actually lifted from Edward D. Wood Jr.'s short film, Final Curtain.
Ah, there you go.
And then just given a voiceover by Criswell.
That's right.
To integrate it into the story.
That's right. I remember reading about that, too. And I've seen that. That's like an extra on another DVD. I forget which one it is.
And you can actually find it on YouTube as well. But And that's always interesting to go on YouTube and you can find these short films and these even some feature films. Done by, you know, these people who have...
Oh, yeah, and we are not the only Ed Wood fans out there. There are a lot of Ed Wood fans out there who have done a lot of incredible work and dug up a lot of interesting stuff. So if you're interested in Ed Wood and any of his movies, you can definitely get on YouTube or get on the internet, and you'll find all kinds of interesting stuff there.
Tons of stuff.
Which is great.
Well,
look back at Angora. That's fun.
Yeah, that's a great documentary. Okay, special... effects.
All right, at this point we need to talk about the seance.
Yeah.
Because the seance was a special effects tour de force. Okay.
Well, I think it's really the only special effects in the movie.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah, technically, that's the only
anything else.
So
maybe driving in that very bright pitch black night.
Oh yeah, we can see everything. Yeah. But, so, yeah,
Describe the seance room.
Okay.
Give us an idea of what.
So, there are these guys sitting at the table. I think I've mentioned before that they're sitting across the seat from a couple of skeletons that are just sitting there. And then...
So, there's three guys. Well, there's the lady, the widow, her young man, and then this guy who wants to see his wife.
Right.
An older guy.
And then Dr. Akula is sitting at the head with two skulls on the chair. And
they change direction. They don't always look the same way.
Right, continuity.
And the candles don't always stay the same.
Continuity.
Yeah,
lots of continuity.
And so he starts this fake seance with a trumpet playing, and it's floating. Well, not even floating. It's kind of swinging around because it's on two strings that are not balanced properly.
But
and
where is it?
We don't know. It's all in time and space. It's just floating next to some curtains because there's dark curtains everywhere. So
it just cuts to that. And all you see is that
swing. Da, 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 da. So, that goes off. Then we hear this, some kind of really weird thing. And some guy in a sheet literally sort of slowly gyrates across the screen. And we're like, what the hell is that?
Literally a guy in a sheet.
Lit by a flashlight.
Like in Beetlejuice, where they put the sheets on. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it looked like that.
Yeah, he's lit by a flashlight and he just gyrates across the screen in front of you. You're like, what the hell?
It was
so weird. You get to see it a few times, which is nice. And then, I guess he contacts the spirits, and it's Mungo. And Mungo is an African-American gentleman underneath the table, also lit by a flashlight. And he's just kind of he's moving his jaws back and forth. He's not really saying any words, but somewhere off camera, someone's doing this Mungo impersonation, and it's just and it looks like he's got a soup strainer on his head, like a pasta strainer. Oh, it's very weird. It's like, what the hell?
He's just making faces, and his eyes are getting wide. And you're, okay.
It's very peculiar. It is
the floating object.
The object. I thought it was a cup and saucer.
I think it was an eye or something supposed to be like an eye. I don't know.
All the
weird
floating things, you can definitely see the strings.
It's
the most bizarre seance you will ever see in your life. It's the star of the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, and then it cuts from these floating things to the doctor, who is just sitting there with his eyes half open, looking around. And you have the weirdest music in the background.
So strange. Oh. But, like, I'm always wondering, are they, like, looking at these things and stuff? Or are these just things just somewhere else?
I know.
The people don't react to them at all.
No, they're looking at each other.
They look at each other. They're looking at the skeletons. They look at the doctor. Old lady and the man hold hands.
And they're not, like, terrified. I mean, I'm sorry, but if I saw a trumpet just playing, I'd be a little freaked out myself. Mm-hmm. But, like, they don't ever explain, like, if the trumpets are actually, like, what is going on? Like, who's playing these trumpets, you know?
And if it even looked like that, you might feel a little bit weird. But the fact is, nobody's actually playing the trumpet because the things are not going up and down. It's just clearly swinging back and forth on a pair of unbalanced strings.
Right.
You know? So it doesn't look particularly funny or particularly realistic.
Yeah.
I guess the mannequin could be considered special effects. I don't know who that character is. I don't know who they're supposed to be. But at one point, the inspector wanders into a closet and you see this woman standing there. But I guess they're supposed to be a mannequin with this sort of taffeta or this kind of strange dress and a wig there. And she's got a very, very... Yeah, I don't know these things. She's got a very blank expression on her face, and he's just kind of checking her out. And then later on, she moves, and he's like, oh, my goodness, that's what
a
genius.
He's like, oh, she looks so real. Her skin feels so real.
But you can see her moving in the background. You can see her breathing.
She's breathing.
She is breathing. You can tell. Yeah, it's kind of a shame.
Yeah.
But I don't know who that's supposed to be.
For a police detective, he's not very good.
No, he's like observing like an idiot. But I guess that's one of
the seance.
That's one of the.
You saw his face during right. the seance. He totally didn't believe in like making all these.
So I guess she's one of the actors that he hires. But why is she standing there like a mannequin?
That's never explained at all.
An evil smile.
And very fake eyebrows, like massive eyebrows.
And like she's never seen again.
No.
In the movie.
There's no explanation.
There's only one scene, and she tells him to come, I guess, and he runs away.
And that's another very Ed Woodian trope. You see this in this female characters in most of his movies, where they're this come hither thing. You know, I guess that's supposed to be kind of creepy. It's sort of not.
It's not very... Well, I guess back in the day, like, any of this could be scary, I guess.
Whatever,
but like a taught child.
Oh yeah, if you were a kid, you might be impressed by this film.
Yeah, this film might scare you a little bit.
Jen's saying no.
Kids I know.
Well, today's kids, perhaps not.
Yeah, these kids today watch Saw and Hostel, so
yeah,
I don't
kids
know.
In 1958, you know, maybe, well, maybe not.
Even then, I don't know. You might be right.
Tourist pajamas are pretty scary, though.
All right, so that's pretty much the special effects, like the seance
there's extra lightning that's brought in for no other reason other than to be scary old house lightning. And
well, yeah, because there's no storm.
There's
but
no
there
storm.
Might be.
Right? They keep
they keep
saying that over and over and over.
Okay.
We actually can't afford a real storm, so we're gonna have this stock footage storm.
Well, they didn't have like a weather app those days. So they had no idea when the storm was going to come. You know, there might be a storm.
Well, you
could
say
lightning.
That about any night. And there might be a storm tonight.
The set decoration is very strange. It's clearly in some kind of a back lot somewhere in a factory or something. But, you know, you look at it, it's like, why is there a plastic skull nailed to the wall there? Why is this one sitting there? Why is that weird picture in a weird angle there? It's just very strange.
Is there one wanted poster in the police station by itself?
With all the names on masking tape written in pen.
Okay.
For the
doors, that brings me to set design, which was a big talk earlier, too. I mean, we kind of have discussed it a little bit, but like the set for the house is huge.
You know, it's like TARDIS. You know, you go in one place and it's like 15 times the size that it should be.
Well, I noticed when we were first watching it, the house that they walk into, the door is obviously very different. Continuity.
Continuity.
There's all, you know, there's a, basically, you walk, he walks in, was it Bradford walks in, closes the door or whatever, the Dr. Acula sees him, and there's obviously a different door.
Right.
So you know that they're not shooting in the same place, obviously.
Like, not even close.
And, yeah, I mean, the door was huge and, you know, and everything.
Huge and bigly. Yeah,
it was strange that, like, that happened. But, like, obviously they did it because they needed the exterior
like, look
of the
at
house.
This. What is that supposed to be?
It is
wood paneling.
Yes.
With a bit of...
Halfway up the wall.
Halfway up the wall.
You know, it was kind of country, what's it called? Do the wood thing, wainscot.
Yeah.
Whatever it's called.
Except that it's just, it looks like it's just leaning haphazardly against the wall.
Well, they just haven't attached it yet. They just moved in.
Yeah.
They're going to be leaving
soon. I know.
They don't want to do that many renovations.
And there's like a skull sitting up there just by itself. There's a bit of like plant material up there by itself.
They literally remade this house.
There's a bit of wallpaper, ugly, horrible, hideous 50s wallpaper,
yeah,
sort of partially on one wall. There's a pile of bricks there.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about the bricks.
The wallpaper surrounds most of the door. It's just very strange. It's like, where the hell are these people?
Well,
the police station didn't have any doorknobs.
Oh, yeah, the police station looked awful.
Police station looked
lots
bad.
Lots of wood paneling, no doorknobs.
Yeah.
And I think they used that same place here towards the end, because there was the same door without a doorknob.
Right. Oh, wow.
And I guess this is
you
still,
went back to the police station
still special effects, but you end up seeing an awful lot of fully articulated plastic skeletons. You know, like those medical specimens that just hang there. Yeah.
That's bad.
Left over from Plan 9 because you had one there too.
Oh.
Well, you can never have too many plastic skeletons.
This is true. I say that all the time.
Oh, dear.
The sad thing is, I think that's true. That you say that all the time.
I do.
Did you know it could storm tonight?
That's true.
Oh,
that's true.
Did you see it? Well,
it's raining now.
Oh. Well, it could storm tonight. Anyway. You know, all in all, I think that this movie was fun.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we almost forgot to talk about the old gentleman's suit that Paul was enamored of.
Well, clothing in general is a very interesting thing in this film, too. So, yeah, the guy had this very loud tie with a very loud shirt and a very loud jacket. That stood out to me immediately. Dr. Acula has his turban with a feather and some kind of weird thing on the front.
Got an ascot.
The young girl in the beginning has the Angora sweater. The young boy that's with him has these long pleated pants that are pulled up like all the way up to his nipples.
How is the style?
Yeah, I guess so. There's another woman who has like 70 pounds worth of fur. The old woman that accompanies Harvey B. Dunn. She has that really weird sort of Ma Kettle hat.
She's dressed.
Oh my God!
Very nicely. That's well.
So there's quite a variety of interesting costumes in this film too.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wish it was in color because you know there's going to be some seriously garish colors.
Oh yeah.
And then Lobo in his pajamas and hides and bits and pieces that I guess burned in the first film. It's just very strange.
Yeah, the outfits, the costume design was crazy.
I mean, the cop uniforms were okay, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And the Lieutenant Dunn did have a nice nice tuxedo that he ruined.
Yeah.
And
yes, he ruined.
And his top hat.
And his top hat.
Extra points for the top hat.
So, yeah, it was just interesting, the
well,
choices.
Yeah, the lady that's the white ghost.
Oh, yeah.
Put that out. You know, that wasn't too bad.
No, that was a very poofy dress.
Very poofy, yeah.
And then the one with the black
ghost,
lace.
I know you loved her.
The
her
tiara.
Crown. Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That was huge.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like a Burger King crown, only like twice the size.
The sequins on
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes. And Criswell, he had a sequined tuxedo.
Oh, yes. Oh.
So, clothing choices were very curious.
Yeah. And
not as bad as some movies you've made me watch.
This is true.
There have been some questionable choices in the costume in those movies. But in this movie, you know, it was okay. And there was some, you know, obviously not everybody's going to have, like, you know, the perfect outfit or whatever. They probably, a lot of them probably just brought their own.
I mean, honestly,
yeah.
Poor Lobo's costume does not flatter his figure very well.
That is awful. That is absolutely horrible. Now, the pants are okay, but the vest only, you know, hanging off of him. He only has one arm through the vest hole, and the other one is just, like, is tied around. That was just horrible.
I know.
So you the suit that you were enamored with, you had also talked about how it was not actually like it was out of sequence, like it didn't look like it was well put together or whatever.
Right.
So I really do think these people brought these things from home.
It would not
don't
surprise
know how to dress
me.
Themselves.
It would not surprise me.
You know.
So everyone's got. I guess everyone in the '50s had an opera tux. Hanging in the closet.
Yeah.
Criswell did with sequins, because I think we only ever see him in any Ed Wood movie in some kind of a
tuxedo. So maybe he brought it. And who knows? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Cause...
So you're saying that guys nowadays are terribly underdressed and have no style.
Well, compared to the 50s, sure.
Yeah,
well,
okay.
The 50s, you know, people had to wear suits.
Look at that thing. What is that on her head? On
it looks like a bird.
Head.
I told you, on the skull. It's either a bird or a mohawk.
Or, you know, a weasel? I don't know what that is.
Yep. You never know.
Really
only Ed Wood knows.
Only Ed Wood knows. And he took that secret to the grave. Unfortunately.
Okay. So.
Anything else on that card?
I think that was it.
That was it.
Yeah. So let's kind of talk about the ending. You know, yeah. I mean, like, or about, like, our thoughts, like, summarize
okay.
everything. So, our before we get to the ranking. So, did you guys enjoy it? Jen, this is your first time seeing it, so what do you think?
Yeah, I like the old, horror-ish movies.
Horror-ish.
Yeah,
more ish than horror.
Yes. Yeah, I enjoy it. I think they're interesting. I like to look at the costumes and everything, and I hadn't seen much Ed Wood, so it was definitely different.
This is
one of the good things is you don't really have to pay attention that much to the movie because it's not that good. So you have a chance to spot things like how the candles at the seance grow over time as opposed to, other way. Yeah. You watch these other things because you really don't have to pay attention.
But all of that narration, that juicy, tasty, important narration.
I don't remember a word of it. But I started to block it out.
You can literally go to sleep and know the whole story by closing your eyes because of the narration.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it, you know. I enjoyed it. It's not my favorite Ed Wood film. My favorite is actually Bride of the Monster, which a lot of, you know, I thought about doing Bride of the Monster, but it's been the Misdeed. It's been talked about through a lot of other ones. Night of the Ghouls just kind of doesn't get the love like it deserves.
And I don't remember if we mentioned it or not, but this is the one that sat on the shelf for a long time because Ed Wood could not afford to pay the development costs to get it developed and get it printed and everything.
Yep. So Wade Williams, who produced and put out many of these movies, I believe he paid Ed Wood's wife whatever, you know, he paid the cost or whatever for it. And then,
probably a bar tab or two.
Yeah, and then ended up... you know, putting it out. And
see, like, there's a skull on the wall there. Why?
Turned sideways, too.
Turned sideways.
I know. It's so strange.
It looks like it's trying to communicate with them.
Yeah. It says, go watch something else.
It's like, go away. Leave this house.
Oh, my goodness.
I
like it. It's if you're an Ed Wood fan, this is definitely in the realm of a movie you need to watch. It's got recurring characters, as we said before. It's got all the wonderful Ed Wood touches that you know from other Ed Wood films. And, you know, it's kind of a fun little movie. It's really not, you know, it's not a horrible movie. It's a bad movie, but it's not boring. It doesn't commit the cardinal sin, fortunately.
Well, except for the narration.
Except for the narration.
But
yeah,
even that didn't bore me.
It bothered me, but it didn't bore me.
It bothered me a little bit because it was just too much.
Yeah, it's unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was a lot of just talking about what was going on. that we could already see, you right. know.
And it's funny because not only is there the normal narration, which I believe is Criswell,
mm-hmm.
but he also has, I guess, the guy who plays Bradwell also Bradford, does yeah. internal monologues.
Oh, my God.
Narration as well. So yeah. you've got all kinds of extra dialogue going on.
Competing narrations.
I know.
But I think that comes back to your point about this being lifted, most of that lifted from that other short film.
It reminded me of, remember when we watched Bigfoot Wars?
Yes.
It reminded me of that, where there was like that annoying narration that the mm-hmm. C. Thomas Howell did.
Yeah.
They pretty much ripped it off from this movie or whatever. Because like, it's like, we don't need that. We don't need to know what's going on through people's heads and mm-hmm. or what's going on the screen. We can see it, you know.
And you realize that when you watch a silent movie, you don't need all the narration. You realize you can follow most of the movie with just those few, oh goodness, what are the cards called?
Oh, the cue cards?
Yeah. Yeah, you just have those few and you get the whole story. You don't need all the extra crap that a lot mm-hmm. of movies throw in nowadays.
Right, and there was a good 2-minute part of, you know, the lieutenant touching the rail and making a big deal out of it. And then he's narrating exactly what it is you were seeing. So that's just like, not only is it unnecessary, but you're getting it twice.
Yeah, so that's unnecessary, yes. doing it twice. So yeah, it was, but you know, it was, still the movie was enjoyable enough.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's fun. It's definitely part of the stable of classic stinkers.
Like I said, it's one of the movies I can watch of Ed Wood,
mm-hmm.
you know, over and over. Like, I mean, I the only one I can't watch, and this is, you're going to go crazy on me, but it's Glenn or Glenda.
Oh, I love Glenn or Glenda.
It's so boring.
I love it. Well,
no, it's so boring.
I, you know, Orgy of the Dead is boring. That's boring. That's the most odious amount of dancing you'll ever see in your life.
Yeah.
But Glenn or Glenda is just so weird. I love it. It's we need to get you to see Glenn or Glenda. That's fun.
No.
Oh, God. What has Jen gotten herself into? We need Criswell to say that.
Absolutely.
You know, or whatever. Be the monologue about that. Maybe on next season we'll
next
do Glenn.
Next season. We have to do another Ed Wood movie.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, I guess let's do our rankings.
Okay.
Okay, you go first, Paul.
So this is a pretty darn stinky movie. However, as you have seen, there are plenty worse. I think that I'll probably give this a 7.5. It's not quite an 8, not quite a 7, but it's got some stink to it, but not too bad. This was pretty tame, stink-wise.
Okay. What about you, Jen?
I was going to throw it into the 7 category. Yeah, it's pretty bad, but it's also older, and it's got a bit of that classic touch to it. So it gets extra points for that.
And there's some good stuff in it, too. Some of the acting is pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some of it is.
Some of it.
Not all of it, but some of it.
Well, no, but there's no one you can really point to here and be like, oh, that was like the worst acting. And all of it was fairly well.
Okay. It's really the seance scene that kind of lifts this into the realm of really bad stink.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I would say, like, having the scene with the, what is it, the bum coming in and stuff like that.
That was good.
That did not help the movie.
Well, how about when the cops are walking by? So the camera angle is kind of shooting down on this, and the
right.
cops walk underneath it. One of them looks straight up at the camera, like, what are you doing there? Yeah. And walks by. I love that.
And the ending is a little weird with the accidental ghosts coming in and taking Dr. Acula back with them is, you know, okay.
But story-wise, I feel like that kind of fits in. Like, it's not completely out of left field.
Yeah.
But it also makes sense. I mean, this is a movie that actually makes sense.
Yeah. And actually ends, you know, whatever. So, it ends fine. I would give it a 6, honestly.
Okay.
I don't think it's...
Well, we do want your honest opinion.
Yes. Honestly, I give it a 6 because I think it... is one of those films that, like, this is a film I could watch again, you know, or whatever. You know, I've watched this a few times, a couple of times if I want to go to sleep, you know, like, it helps a little bit.
Okay.
But sometimes then I can still watch it all the way through, you
know. Are you saying this movie's better than Barn of the Blood Llama?
Yes.
Is that even a question? Like, yeah, this movie is definitely better than Barn of the Blood Mama. But
Blood of the Barn Mama?
Barn of the Blood of the Barn Mama? I don't know. Whatever it is. I keep saying it messed up. But anyway, this movie is enjoyable. It is not the best movie of all time at all. This is the Citizen Kane of Ed Wood's movies. This is literally probably Citizen Kane of all of Ed Wood's movies. Because it's not, you know, it's because Bride of the Monster is actually worse in terms of like a lot of different things. This actually tried to have a good story.
Right. And this is certainly better than Glen or Glenda, which is one of the reasons I love that, because let's face it, Glen or Glenda is incoherent.
And a lot of people don't give credit to Jailbait, which is actually a pretty good movie.
That actually is a good movie. I like Jailbait. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
We should do that movie, too. We need to do all of Ed Wood's movies. We need to.
Oh, goodness. Maybe someday. Maybe. I don't know. But he's made a few stinkers that have not been really talked about
right,
as much.
Right, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
That's the thing is... Not many people talk about Glen or Glenda.
Right.
Not many people talk about...
And let's face it. I mean, one of the things that you and I got... I mean, we became friends with is because of our mutual love of Ed Wood. That's kind of what started it.
Yep. And Ed Wood, I mean, I love his style, his, you know, his really bad writing, mm-hmm. his... I mean, it seems like he wrote this in a day, probably,
right.
you know?
You know, I want to throw a little shout out to this disc. I don't remember who put this out. But this is a good-looking print of this movie. Mm-hmm. It looks really, really good. The contours are really good. The black and whites are really sharp. It actually looks good. You know, I think if Ed Wood were to see this on the big screen like we're seeing it, I think he'd be very pleased. You know, I think the DP would be very pleased. It looks good. You know, it's just what you're actually seeing isn't necessarily so good, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, the movie itself isn't the greatest, but it definitely could have been a lot worse.
Right.
And
we've seen worse.
Yeah.
By the way, the DP of this, the camera guy of this, is the same camera guy from Plan 9 and Bride of the Monster, William C. Thompson. And, you know, you can kind of tell, like, it's got that same feel and that same look and... You know,
there's a certain Ed Woodian feel to all his movies, really. So it's great.
So anyway, thank you guys so much for listening. If you listened to this whole thing, that's awesome.
Yay!
We really appreciate that.
And keep going out there being Ed Wood fans, because there's lots of us out there.
Yeah, we love Ed Wood. Well, Paul and I do. Jen, we're going to make her a fan.
We'll melt her cold, cold heart, and she will love Ed Wood, too.
We'll see.
Well, we got to get her to see the Ed Wood movie.
Yeah, she's got to see the Ed Wood movie first.
Yeah.
Eventually.
But thank you, guys. Please check out indiefilmcafe.reviews, our website, where you'll see links to our Patreon,
our YouTube,
as well as Stitcher,
Podbean,
which is where you're hopefully at right now, but you might also be on iTunes.
That's right.
We are on iTunes. So, thank you. If you've subscribed to us on iTunes, we love you.
Please subscribe.
If you've subscribed us to our Podbean, that's awesome as well. We appreciate that. And please, let us know what you guys think.
Absolutely.
Are you guys fans of Night of the Ghouls? Did you guys ever see Night of the Ghouls?
Are you fans of Ed Wood in general?
Yeah. And what's your favorite Ed Wood movie?
Right.
I was going to say, you should leave a comment.
Absolutely.
What is your favorite Ed Wood movie?
And let us know which one we should review next.
Yeah, and we'll do that on the next season. So thank you guys so much for checking this out, and hope you guys have a wonderful week. Bye.
All right, bye. Women in laces.